Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, we're having a little technical difficulty this morning. Welcome to Our Black News. I'm actually waiting for my guest co-host, Anthony Scott, who's fiddling around about 20 different computers. I hear him. Let me switch to the grid there. There you go. I can hear you a little bit. Can't see you. But I can hear you, sir. I can hear you loud and... someone's trying to call me. All this craziness. Okay. Mr. Scott, how are you doing? Oh, this dude's going to get beat up. If he, there we go. Okay, I have like, there we go. There we go. Now we're cool. Now we're just going to cut that off. Mr. Scott, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good, good. We can't see you, but we have a perfect and a nice sound connection there. And cool, we can go ahead and do this and knock it out of the box. I'd like to welcome everyone this morning to good morning and welcome to Our Black News, kind of annotated edition here. I'm joined today by Mr. Anthony Scott, who I wrote was a publisher, historian. And Anthony, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your fine book? We received a copy about a week ago, and I think that this is something that needs to go out in the hemisphere, and people need to know about what it is that you're publishing and putting out and letting people be a part of. Oh, there we go. We can see you perfectly. Thank you.
Oh, all right. All right. Yeah, Don. We have a book that's out now, and when I say we, I'm talking about the nonprofit. I know nonprofits have been slammed. The nonprofit, Minnesota's Black Community Project. And how this project started was through the work of my father, Walter Scott, who did three books on the Twin Cities Black communities in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and that was released as the Scott Collection through the Minnesota Historical Society. And through that, we were able to put together a nonprofit and the new book that's out now, Minnesota's Black Community, the 21st Century, which is really an update of all the work that my dad did that is chronicling the positive events, the business events, the educators, the legal people, all the Black people in the Twin Cities area that are doing positive things. And I'm not talking about just people that are presidents of companies. I'm talking about people that are doing day-to-day things that are making positive impacts in their community. So the book is out now, Minnesota's Black Community Project. And in a few minutes, I'll just grab a copy of it and put it up so people can see it.
Yeah.
And if you want books, they're available Amazon. They're available for me. I have a number of people that call me. They like the books autographed, and we've got nothing but positive feedback, especially at times like we have right now with all the unrest, with all the disparities here.
Yeah.
You really see that in spite of all the things that have been against us as Black people, we still continue to do positive things. There is still the heart and soul of what we have to make things happen. So it's really pointed out in the new book, and we hope people get a copy of it. It's available in libraries, I encourage you to buy your own copy, though.
Yes.
So it's a lot of information to digest. And books are available. Like I say, they're out now. And the nonprofit has a lot of other events coming up. We do events. One of our great events we had after the Philando killing, we had an event called Policing and Keeping Your Family Safe in the Twin Cities. And we had a special guest, Commander Charles Adams.
Oh, wow.
He came to the meeting, and he came along with a good friend of yours, Don, Mr. Ron Edwards, attended the meeting. And a lot of people in the meeting came to call Ron and go, okay, what's going to happen now? And Ron just really sat back and listened, but he asked Commander Adams a really hard question. So why don't we have any women on the police force?
Mm.
Why aren't there specifically any black women on the police force?
Yes.
And the commander said, definitely, it's the testing that they want people to run 5 miles in almost an Olympic time period. And Commander Adams said, none of our officers could even do that. And so he's made efforts to go through HR and personnel to change the requirements to get more people in. And those are the things that are behind the scenes that have been barriers for us in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And Commander Adams also said another thing about being stopped by the police. He said he's the commander of the police. Okay, he's commander of Minneapolis police. He's been stopped. He said he might go to the grocery store and he'll have his peace with him. And he just keeps his hand on the steering wheel. He just follows it around. He doesn't go into anything other than eventually he says they know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But his thing was do not escalate anything and just try to get out of there. And I hope to have him back for another meeting. Commander Adams is a real experienced community police-oriented person. That's just one of the events we have.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. And, again, there are people on Facebook live stream. Thank you for being here, Mr. Meyer, Mr. Wallace. Mr. Myers wants to know what's the best way he can acquire one of the books directly. He does not want to go to Amazon. So, Mr. Meyer, I'll hook you up with Anthony after the show here via Messenger, if that's okay. Good morning, Mr. Lee. Our phone number, our call and phone number here, the listener line, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we're just going to hang out and have a laid-back, it's not going to be a laid-back conversation, but we're laid-back because we've been talking about this, what's happening with our secondary and our youth in the black community from 14 to 21 years old, and there's a lot of chaos going on in that group, and they are not listening really to the mainstream message, and nor they should have to listen to the mainstream message. The mainstream message has basically excluded them except for a few pockets here and there. For example, I know an organization that has over 300 black kids in it from 14 to 21 years old. And for the last 3 years, this organization has had a 100% college acceptance rate for these 300 black kids in the suburbs, too far off Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm not going to go into details. I'm not going to point at them specifically, but it just goes to show you that with the right mentoring and nurturing, that things can happen how they're supposed to happen versus the other way around, which has been pretty much devastating for many families here in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and the surrounding suburbs.
Well, Don, I'd like to see our corporations get involved in this because it's in their benefit to do that, to get workers. I found a book that I was part of in the 80s. It was called the Asset Program.
Mm-hmm.
This was the yearbook from the program. What the asset program was, it's a program put together by the Control Data Corporation, funded by the Department of Labor, $3 million contract. And what we did was we traveled to job corps around the country, and we recruited students that could pass the entry test at Control Data Institute. We brought 100 kids from around the country to Minneapolis. We housed them at the old Nicollet Hotel downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually living in hotel rooms, had their meals there, had bus transportation to go right from the Nicollet Hotel to Control Data Institute, which was on Washington at that point.
Mm-hmm.
it really was walking distance. We provided transportation. 94 kids graduated. Hmm. Out of 100,
yeah.
90 were placed on jobs, many in their home community. Well, a lot of them stayed right here in the Twin Cities area and worked with Control Data and worked, some of them, until the company closed. And then they went to places like IBM or other tech companies and still continued to work in this field. And I can't see why programs like that can't continue. I mean, Mr. William Norris, who's president of the Control Data at that time, mm-hmm. he had the vision of starting this. Department of Labor actually came here, had a big ceremony with Ernie Green, who was Assistant Secretary of Labor then. He's one of the Little Rock Nine.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the ones that were denied entrance to Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. They had to call the guard out. They had to call. And he eventually became the first Black to graduate from that school. And he was part of helping Control Data bring this program to Minneapolis, which trained 100 youth as computer programmers or computer engineers, and they got employment. So I can't see why this type of program can't be replicated, even if you're just doing it here in town. With a lot of these tech companies, you've got the Medtronics, you've got a lot of medical companies, the 3Ms, put their heads together and let's do it.
Yeah, and I agree 100% why I checked the phone line since I logged myself off. You know, if the STEM stuff seems really incredible, and can go a long way and do a lot of things for a lot of our youth. And there goes a copy of the book right there. Folks that are wondering, it's Minnesota's Black Community. This is the book that Mr. Scott's involved in. You can get one. And anybody interested, in, just inbox me, and I'll make sure that I connect you with Mr. Scott. And I'll take my 5% off the top. Anyway, just kidding. Welcome to Our Black News is a non-revenue generating news agency, which means that we are not adhered to any agenda of anybody, basically. And so it's rare that you find that. I know a lot of our Black news agencies here in the Twin Cities receive huge advertising dollars from the city, the county, the state, Comcast, the COVID-19 Relief Fund, and while this organization did apply, we did not fit the narrative for what they wanted. And so, you know, you lose some, and then you lose some. But in the end, it's a win because you're still doing what you're doing, and you're not sitting in front of a camera on Facebook Live every day for 5 or 6 minutes barking out some crap about COVID-19, and that doesn't make sense. All of our podcasts that we do available, or our live broadcasts, are available in podcast form at the link for Our Black News on Blog Talk Radio. So they're archived. I have over 11 years of broadcasts between Mr. Edwards and I, M, a bunch of guest hosts have come on and filled.
I hope M calls in. I really would hope. I'd like to hear from him. I'd like to hear from him.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you. From all these people. And, yeah, it was really good, really good. And so, you know, people have a hard time kind of talking about this. And I'm not trying to demonize any Black people, talk about any Black people, or talk a bad way about Black people. But I'm at the point, Em, that I'm pretty much upset and fed up and sick of picking up the newspaper or going online and reading that, you know, a 14-year-old kid shot a 17-year-old kid in the head. And so rather than linger on that, because it's a great loss for not only their immediate family, but for the community, because that kid was, you know, that 17-year-old was going to be a senior, and that if he wasn't already, and that 14-year-old was supposed to go into middle school. Now, he's going to be basically locked up for the majority of his life. Things don't go his way, which they're not going to go his way because they have been. And so I pondered four questions. And I want some listener participation. And we do have a caller. I'm going to get right to you. But I want to put these questions out real quick. The first question is, what are the systems in play that we can identify that can let us know what we are up against? in this situation and all these killings in St. Paul, Minneapolis, with this core group of 14 to 21-year-olds. The second question, what people are working within various systems that can shift the trajectory? Who do we have that can possibly upset this normal and make it abnormal, meaning that the normal has been the killing, the shootings, the robberies? Can we make that abnormal? Safe streets, no robberies, kids in school, not carrying guns. The third question is white fragility a factor? Okay. I hope a white person calls in and answers that because I can't answer that. Okay. Thank you very much. The fourth question, where are the conversations taking place about masculinity? There was a time in the Twin Cities in the school system that under the guise of the English department in literature, you would talk about masculinity. You would read different authors that would talk about that. I had a couple just on the tip of my tongue there, but Rubin, for one, The Traffic of Women, kind of talks about the femininity point, but also gets into the masculinity stuff. And there's a lot of different, well, it's not happening. And it seems like that stuff is important, especially from 10th to 12th grade in any high school and anywhere in the United States, because when you get to college, they're going to talk, those are some of the topics, actually. And so where is that happening at? And the last question, let's discuss immediate solutions, proactive engagement, and sustainability. Where do we start? And with that, Em, we have a caller. I would like to get the caller on the line here. Good morning, caller. Your last four is 4644. Thanks for calling. What's your question, comment, or concern?
Well, this is Mr. Pianchi.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back.
I like the part about where you talked about the training program. And there's entities that exist like that currently. I like to talk about the National Society of Black Engineers. And the efforts that they make trying to produce more STEM students, trying to produce at least 10,000 graduates every year. Their first goal was 25,000, but they had to downsize that because of the reality. What's the reality? The reality is this, is that a large number of black students are not being prepared in their elementary years. And also, their parents and family are not doing the things necessary to spur on interest in these fields, nor are they doing the things necessary to see what that child has an inept ability to do. And we know what that inept ability, I went to a trade high school. And before I could get into that high school, I had to demonstrate my inept ability in the area that I was looking at going into, my mechanical aptitude. And they had the way to test students and see exactly what they have an inept ability to do. Now, I'm going to ask you guys this. Don't they do that at football combines? Don't they do that at basketball camps? A person that's 7 foot, they're not going to let them be a forward. And I don't know very much about basketball, nor a person that's 5'6", they can't be a center. And, you know, here's the thing, too. If blacks have to prepare their children, and they got to get as many of them out that possibly want to get out of this present traditional educational system. I have told you that at some national conventions that NSB have, I've seen corporations, Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, just to name the two that I was told about. Hey, 2 years in a row, Northrop Grumman hired 400-plus black STEM graduates off of their convention, national convention floor.
Wow.
In 2019, Lockheed Martin hired 400 off the convention floor. And these students are not starting off at no $30,000 a year, generally. If they're hired as engineers, they're going to be starting off at $60,000, $70,000, maybe $80,000, depending on. And I know for a fact, I have a grandson that's a petroleum engineer. And he interned with ExxonMobil. So that's where it is. Now, here's another thing, too, fellas.
Okay, go ahead.
We have to draw a line in the sand. Because you got some black voices out there. And I know you've heard them. And we could probably identify some by name, or at least some of their organization, that says that when black students go to work for your Boeing, IBM, when black students go to work for NASA, the CIA, the FBI, all they're doing is furthering and empowering white supremacy. If a white organization was to say that black students' IQ is on the level of a highly trained chimpanzee, it would be all sorts of rebuttal against that. Racism cards would be flying through the air. But why come the same type of effort and ridicule is not posed upon some of these black organizations that's saying practically the same thing, but they're just using different words? Don't go to work for them. Well, who in the hell are they going to go to work for?
Yeah. Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. You said something pretty interesting about these job, as you stated, conventions. Can I ask what years were you talking about? Because I want to drop a bomb on that in a positive way.
The last three years, they would have had a convention this year, but because of the COVID. Now, what it is, it says the National Society of Black Engineers does a survey of its members, and they list their top most preferred employers. And in 2018, the NSBE 50. You know, the number one was Google, two, Apple, three, NASA, four, Amazon, five, Boeing, Microsoft, Lockheed, Exxon, GE. Number 38 was Bechtel. Number 42 was FBI. Number 44 was the Department of Defense. You know, it just goes on and on. CIA was number 47. Mm-hmm. Delta Airlines was number 30. So they list their most preferred perspectives. And that's based on probably their contact with them or the company contacting them one way or the other. And at these conventions, they have like a job fair. You know, they have central location where all these corporations come and set up, which is very convenient for the students because they don't have to travel from state to state, city to city, and try to meet job fairs when they have them at these headquarters. So they come to this central location, set up, and you may have 100 corporations that set up at these job fairs, and they are hiring these students.
Well, see, what I'm seeing today is, me personally, I've been to several job fairs in like the last 10 years, and then I stopped going for me personally because I didn't really need to go to a job fair anymore. But I really like the veteran job fairs that they have here in the state of Minnesota. But we've been having these what's called the People of Color job fairs. The People of Color job fairs. And I don't know. I went to one. And I specifically asked different companies that were represented there, keyword represented. I said, can you hire someone today? Can you interview someone today? Which is the most important piece. Those engineering conventions, NASA, CIA, FBI, all those people, they are coming to hire, interview and hire. And I don't understand why it's different when there's a people of color job fair. And I know those corporations that are there, are they might have good intentions. They paid a fee for their they might or might not have paid a fee for their booth area. The state might have came in with some money to give the facilitator, you know, wiggle room to rent a place to actually advertise and put it on. But yet, where is the process or where is the system within that system that employs 3,000 to 5,000 people or interviews 150 people, maybe, you know, even if we get to that point? And I don't think that's happening. And again, that's another breakdown in the system. If we're going to have job fairs, I think, and call them people of color job fairs, they need to be beneficial to people of color.
Well, I would stay away from something like that. But go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
No, he said go ahead, man.
Oh, yeah, I've been to job fairs here. And I can tell you, when I got out of college, they had something that has never really happened here that I've ever seen before. It was a national meeting of one of the black fraternities. Mm. I can't remember which one it was. It was downtown at the Big Radisson. And so we really went down there to party. We really figured out. But then we said, wait a minute, there's going to be all these employers there. Let's take some resumes here. We went to these things with four or five of my good friends, and we all had job offers. I had four or five job offers, and I was working for the state at the time, and I decided to take control of that because I didn't want to move to Milwaukee or Chicago. So that's where the effectiveness of these things come in. When they come in with a mission, and it was networked through the black fraternity organization, so they probably talked to these corporations and had it all set that we're going to have candidates there, and they were actually doing interviews. You could actually sit down and have an interview for the job with these recruiters, actually real recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's, you know, we can't do it in a perfunctory way. We have to really have people that can actually sit down and draw out the talents and interests
mm-hmm.
of the individuals too. Because a lot of kids, even though they've gone through secondary education, they still don't have a lot of focus on what they want to do, and they're still trying to find their way. And I think that process needs to not just stop at school or college. It needs to continue on so that people can find an opportunity. Those opportunities are there and should continually be accessible. And that's my thing, is accessibility.
Yeah, yeah. And I would have to agree with that, because, you know, getting back, you know, I'm so glad that this caller called in, because, I mean, just the bucket of knowledge, or I should say the tanker of knowledge that he has is an input in a wise way is beneficial to this conversation. I hope he would stick around for a minute if he had time.
Well, yeah, I love talking on this subject. You know, another thing, go to NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers, website.
Okay.
And then look at jobs after you get past the questions that they ask you. They have jobs, all jobs, and posted jobs. If you click all jobs, you see that they have over 7,413 results. And these postings have not been, they weren't posted 5 years ago. Some of them was posted within days ago. And I've seen the number higher, and I've seen it lower. So these companies do come to where they think that they can find the talent that they need. But the thing is that people have to prepare their children for these positions. You got an organization out there in California, Oakland Youth First, and Bard Graves have made training available. And doing the same thing as far as this, seeing the ineffability of these students in aviation and marine navigation. So those are areas where you don't see many African-American present, especially in the aviation business. And also aviation, the Bureau of Labor Statistics made a point that there's going to be a great shortage of commercial pilots. Of course, they're having some problems now with this pandemic. But if you have a shortage of commercial pilots because pilots are retiring or for whatever reason, and we're talking about numbers in the 200,000, well, you should be mm-hmm. preparing your young people.
Yeah, and that's the point that we're trying to dig into in the Twin Cities, and I mean, it's probably across the country. I'm sure it is, but we have a challenge with that 14 to 21 age group, that formative years, you know, and then later on in high school, and then after you graduate, and there's a piece of purgatory put in there, I think, between 17 and 21, where the kids don't really know. And your point is well taken, and that's kind of the point we're trying to get to, is that are we preparing, well, these are rhetorical questions, are we preparing the youth for those jobs you speak of? No. Okay? Are there agencies here that have those opportunities for these youth? Yes. But how do we, who do we talk to? Where do we start at? I mean, that's the challenge that I'm having. Where do we start to fix a system that, one, wasn't created for us, two, and I'm not playing the victim role or anything like that, wasn't created for us, but two, has not educated our kids to the point of that they see if you do this, it's like cause and effect. If you do this, this happens. Or if you do that, this happens, you know? And that's where I've struggled, no matter how much I write about it, read about it, to where do we start to not self-correct, but make whatever is that system that's overcasting our kids, boys and girls, not just from black folks, but that's about everybody, change into the mood of getting a good education. You know, you can't really point fingers at teachers, parents, the school. You can't point fingers at one group or person or organization alone. There's too many, I think, this is just my opinion, there's too many things happening, too many things spinning in a counterclockwise direction. And if this thing doesn't stop soon, I think it's going to implode on itself, which will be devastating for our community.
Well, I think, Don, you know, Paul, I think one thing is these companies and these opportunities, they need to do a little more outreach. They need to outreach into the communities. They need to network. In the olden days, which I guess they're older now, the urban leagues and the NAACPs would coordinate to do positive things. And in high school, I know for me, I worked every summer.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Honeywell. I worked at Control Data. I worked at the telephone company. I had summer jobs, and I could kind of get an idea of what the work thing was. When I worked with a phone company, I had to get up at 5 every day.
Mm.
And so that wasn't my thing, getting up early in the morning. That's something I had to do. But then when I got up, I got off at 1:30. And if I finished my job, what I was doing with the phone company, I could get off by almost noon. And so you began to see how some of these things work and how these jobs work, and you have accessibility and some pre-training to what the world of work is really about. I think that's, anybody can work somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and do something. And I think that idea, as my dad would say, you know, as soon as you're willing to get up every day and find something to do and look for opportunities yourself. And like you say, Don, it's more than one-way thing. The parents are involved. Schools should be involved. Me going to college, coming out of Washburn High School, I have no idea how I ended up in Mankato. It was all set for me to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But then I found out from some of the other students that a man named Michael Fagan was coming down from Mankato and actually going to the schools, doing interviews with students, letting the parents know, giving them things to take home to the parents to show about opportunities at that particular college. But that was all through outreach. When I went to Mankato, I would say it was almost like a HBCU from the standpoint mm-hmm. of the number of black students that were there from South Minneapolis, from St. Paul, from North Minneapolis, and the surrounding area. So I think outreach and networking with the organizations such as the black fraternities, the professional organizations, but somebody has to spearhead this. There has to be leadership to do these type of things. And that's where I see the leadership not being able to coordinate what it takes to make people successful. And also let the students know in do. My first job, I was a rehabilitation counselor, and a guy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be illiterate. He had a fourth-grade education, and so we were going to get him a GED and kind of start over. But he's from the South. He said, well, you know, I said, did you have a job? He said, well, my uncle had a shade tree automobile thing, and I had a job there. And I said, well, what did you do? He says, I worked on carburetors. That was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought carburetors, back in those days, they had floats, and I couldn't mess with a carburetor. I could put plugs in and points, but I couldn't do it. I said, you can do carburetors. He said, oh, yeah, it's real simple. You measure this, blah, blah, blah. So we got him in, took his GED, passed it fairly quickly. Net, he went to a technical program, St. Paul TBI, mm-hmm. and ended up at 3M because someone was able to see that there was something there. And sometimes you have to really reach with some of these kids, and I don't know that the school mechanism coordinated with some of the vocational opportunities in a myriad of ways. But again, to me, outreach, I think, is a real key.
Yeah. And I agree. I just, you know, when you, like I said in the beginning of the program, when you consistently every day in the Twin Cities and being born and raised here, and all of a sudden the news cycle changes to, you know, these kids killing people, 14-year-olds and even younger, and then women being shot. And the political construct here is not what they can do to make sure this stuff. And it's not really all their responsibility either. I'm totally aware of that. But there's some responsibility in pandering, you know, when they pander to these groups and organizations. And again, Anthony, you mentioned that the Urban League and maybe the NAACP and other folks can come in and kind of change things and set up things, and the black fraternities could probably do something. And I think some of them are, but
they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Urban League and NAACP is not going to do that. You know, so, black parents need to have autonomy. They need to have that one last element of autonomy in that school choice where they can take their child where they need to. See, you got a problem where you have a lot of dysfunctionality that goes on in families for whatever the reason. We have to admit that it does exist. See, people can put reasons and excuses on why things exist, but they exist. That ain't the point. They exist. And they're taking too many young people down with them. So the what functionality that you do have, when I say functionality, that is when you have parents or family that take that child as early as the third grade and start instilling in that child and leading them in the right direction to get the best outcome, long-term educational goals. They are hampered by the fact that they don't have the funds for whatever the reason. So school choice with vouchers is where that child can be put where the parents and the family want them to be put in order to prepare them so that they would be ready. Like I said before, you do it with basketball and football. Why come you can't do it with the education too? You have what they call reforming. And this is just one form of choice. Reforming charters. You got the West Michigan Aviation Academy. You got the Aerospace Charter School in Lakeland Regional in Florida. You got a Maritime Academy Charter School in Philadelphia. You got an Arizona Golf Association attorney charter school. So what the name of these schools, what is it telling you that they are preparing these children for? Meridian Medical Arts Charter School in Idaho, they're preparing those children for the medical fields.
Mm-hmm.
These other ones are preparing these children for the aviation field, the aviation industry, because there's going to be a heavy demand.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have blacks, either some group, you don't need no 10,000 students. If you have a dozen of them, work with them and start pushing them. And hopefully others would see it too, and they would join on. And then another thing too, another thing on the political level. politics got to be set up so where you have foreigners that's here in the United States is working at these specialized high-paying fields. Blacks are concentrated in the HELP fields, H-E-L-P fields, and we know what they are, overly present there. When you look at the other field, the engineers and the medicine and so forth, their numbers are minuscule. But you have a lot of foreigners that are occupying those areas. You need politics that's going to say that when your visa expires, you got to go. This is for Americans. There's nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. So one of the things that I heard you say or that you said was this specialized schooling. I always thought that Minneapolis and St. Paul needed one school, like, in between both cities on the bus line, university to our Marshall Lake Street University to Minneapolis, that was a English language arts concentrated school, you know, and there's opportunity for everything to be taught in that school, but just to get kids back in the groove of academic conversations and understanding where they are, you know, in the world with heavy discernment, rhetoric. I mean, just going, deconstructing, doing all this stuff. I always thought there was room for that here in the Twin Cities. And there is, getting back to this, a lot of people here are fighting this school voucher piece, you know, where you can take your kid where you think it's the best for them. But also the data that I've seen, and I've read a little bit, is that the kids, when they go to the suburb schools here in Minnesota, they don't do any better as if they were in an inner city high school or elementary school. So I don't understand why that's happening. There are theories to that. But then again, we still have this problem. We still have this dysfunctional families. We still have these kids making bad choices. And we still have the politicians pandering on many levels. And when I speak about the systems, I'm talking about spinning around, you know, in your social networks, in the political networks you're affiliated with, talking about adults now, and also the employment networks. And this pandemic has sunk a lot of families in our community. And when I say sunk, it's like, it was really interesting because President Trump's declaration or executive order for payroll holiday and to stop the eviction, he pushed it out to December. And there was no one in the White House to say, excuse me, sir, we need to push it out till June 2021 because half of the country will be in the middle of winter at the end of December. And of course, the mainstream media, they're not going to question that. They're just going to say, yeah, it's been pushed out to December. So they can have another crisis to write about at the end of December rather than shed some light on it right now. Now, wait a minute. In Minnesota, December 31st, January, some of the coldest air in the year. And you're going to stop. Are you going to do the eviction protection until the end of December? To me, that's a failure in organizational design as well as political and media as in with, say, outreach to let people know what's going on. So in December, are we to expect this massive evictions across the country in states that are below zero by December 31st? I mean, are they really going to let this happen? And are people, are the leadership, to what M's point, is the leadership really going to sit here, especially in the Twin Cities, and be that quiet? You know, if I was the president of the Urban League, I would get very indignant right now and tell people I was going to dog walk them and pump the brakes because you're moving too fast, and we need to look at this right here. And you're supposed to be able to have the connection as a president of the Urban League or NAACP to go to these political leaders with some documentation. You know, I have people call me M and caller. I have people call me all week long this week talking to me about so-and-so's meeting with this person, so-and-so's meeting with this person, and it's all about delivering some money to some organizations here in town to walk the street. Okay, I get it. That's good. But we've done. We walked the streets 10 years ago. We walked the streets 20 years ago. And the problem still exists. So if you're the president of the Urban League or NAACP, you're supposed to be cognizant enough to have some documentation, go in there, sit down, and say, hey, this is what it's looking like. We need to make sure that all people in Minnesota aren't evicted December 31st because the president signed an executive order, which everyone kind of snail crawled on and just now implemented in some states, and some states will not implement. And so that's not happening here. And it's unfortunate, but when you try to talk to these leaders, I've called the Urban League several times. And I know I don't have a relationship with the president of the Urban League or the NAACP, Minneapolis or St. Paul. I get it. You know, I just don't have that relationship. But when you reach out to these people as a card-carrying member of the Minneapolis NAACP, I better buy a St. Paul one now, or I think it is St. Paul, so I did change it. I moved to St. Paul. But if they're not responding to you, and my first cousin is the vice president of the St. Paul NAACP. You know, the irony.
You have a connection. You do have a connection.
Yeah, but, you know, it has to be a cognitive connection. You know, and I mean, I know him. He's a good guy. I'm not even going to say his name, so I'm not trying to defame him or slander him. He's a good guy, but you got to have some salt on you and understand what's happening and understand what directions to take, which takes some kind of massive understanding of what's really going on. Period.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. How is the president going to make a property owner let people stay in their property without paying rent? What are they supposed to do?
Exactly. That's a good question.
He don't have that power to do that, interfering with private businesses.
They don't have the power. You're absolutely right. But at this Minnesota coronavirus relief distribution sheet of the money that came in from the feds, there would have been enough money in about $21 million to make sure that, number one, properties, owners didn't go into foreclosure. It took probably a little bit more than that, but there was enough money sitting on the table at the very beginning, and now, actually, to make sure that property owners don't go into foreclosure because the tenants aren't paying rent, to make sure the tenants have an ability through the county, through the state, through the city, to filter some kind of money via a program. I'm not talking about no handouts. We're in a different time. All my conservative friends said, everyone, they want handouts. You know, they need to pull up their bootstraps. You know, screw that. You know, we're in a time that we've never seen before, and we have the technology and the process to do everything that I speak of. The money's there.
And how are they going to pay utilities? The utilities get cut off, then the place is condemned. They got to move out of there.
Yeah, there has to be. And that's exactly all these points that you're bringing up is someone that can look and see all these tiers. There's utilities, there's daycare, there's school, there's the rent, there's the light, there's the water and sewer, there's all these things, a car payment. There's all these things that are involved in a well-structured monthly life for anybody, for any family. Okay? So no one has bitten off that big piece of pie to sit down, I think, and really spread it out and look at what is it we should do. Okay? We're in the middle of a pandemic, and people are losing things left and right. And as always, the people who lose the most are the black people in this state. So, again, we're at the top of the list for dying of corona, COVID-19. We're at the top of the list for whatever disparity, losing apartments, foreclosure due to the pandemic. Again, we were on the bottom pre-COVID. We were on the bottom, okay? During COVID, we're on the bottom still, okay? And after COVID, that new normal, whatever that looks like, we're going to be on the bottom. I'm not trying to, you know, foreshadow in a negative way, but what I'm saying is that there's a system in place that it just has its knee on our neck, and we have not been able to outmaneuver it. I mean, if we had 10 guys like each of us three here talking right now that would go in the community, that could see those different levels and discern, you know, what would be cool, what wouldn't be cool, what we need to do, I think that would be great, but we don't have it. Again, you're listening to Our Black News. It's 10:20. We have about 10 more minutes. That call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 if you have a comment, suggestion, or whatever. And we're talking about a lot of things, and the conversation is going just where it needs to go. And I hope that you can plug in and join us. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
Well, Don, you know, there's one thing I'd like to, you know, kind of throw out there, and I guess it's really to both of you gentlemen. And I think this goes right to the, you know, it's current, kind of related to current things. And you two gentlemen seem to be on the frame of the Republican method is the savior of the day. And I guess I want to ask Don, I guess there's two questions about this. In Minnesota, you look at our legislatures, you look at our political parties. I mean, are there black Republicans that are really doing something, and are they getting monies, and do they have the wherewithal to network with the Republicans that supposedly have all the resources to actually do something for the community? I guess I'm throwing this out to both in a way. What have the Republicans done that, you know, they say, well, Democrats have been running these cities and all the Democratic cities that are just all run down, they've all been mismanaged. What has the Republicans really done? Or why haven't they done more? What is your take on that? It's an open-ended question.
I'm a caller. I'm going to let you answer that first.
Well, I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative. But let's look at the arguments. The arguments is disparity in income and wealth. Well,
yay!
If you don't have the ability to sell and offer somebody what they're gonna pay you top dollar for, then you're gonna always be in that area talking about, well, they got more money than I do. So what's the number one thing applied to disparity of income and wealth? It's your educational attainment and the skills that you're trained in. Well, when you look at that party, they're more in favor of disadvantaged people, like we talked about, school choice and vouchers, being able to go where they feel that's best for their children. Another thing, when you start making that type of money, you don't want to be taxed the heck out of yourself. You don't want, if you got a business, you don't want these regulations. Business tax is now 21% compared to the 39.6% with the last administration. That makes up a whole lot of difference when you are in a highly competitive retail market where your profit margin is not that great, i.e. the food industry, grocery stores. So in Missouri, they have the Hancock Amendment. What does that do? It says that when Missouri's revenue outpaces its expenditures by a certain percentage, that money's got to go back to the taxpayers. Well, you know, if you leave money in the hands of politicians, if they got a surplus, they're going to figure out some way to spend that, and it's not going to be beneficial. The best beneficial position for extra money is in the pocket of the people who put it there, and that's the taxpayers. Nobody knows better how to spend money or to apply it than you do. So that's just a couple of things. And, you know, I'm not saying that you don't need these programs that's designed to help people stand on their feet. You do need them. But once a person is standing on their feet, then they have to move on and try to aspire for higher goals and aspirations if they want to. If you need a loaf of bread to survive 1 week, and if I gave you two loaves of bread, well, at the end of the second week, if you hadn't done something to produce loaves of bread, you're going to come back asking for more. You can give people reparations. Give them $35,000. Give them $350,000. If they don't do something that would be productive to produce more money coming in than going out, they're going to be broke. That's why you have pensions. Pensions supposed to, you pay into a pension and build it up so at a point in time it becomes residual income. It comes in every periodic time, every month in this case. Every month you got a pension check coming in. Every month you got a Social Security check coming in. If you got a large annuity, you divide that up where you have every month you want some of that coming. Now, annuity is something different. But you have to have production. If people are not producing, you can give them whatever you want to give them. They're going to run out, and they're going to come back begging for more.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And to answer your question, I have to start out that, you know, I'm probably in the center, leaning right and conservative, because I want to look at both sides and give them discernment as needed. And I find that beneficial for me personally to be a conservative. But first of all, being a rational black man, a rational human being, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not necessarily, I am by no means wealthy. I'm a school teacher and I think at the bottom of the pay scale or just in the middle or somewhere. And it takes a lot of work in different areas in my particular job to make what I want to make, which means that I can be a teacher, but I also can write curriculum. I also can teach the varsity tutor part-time if I want to, but I have to do maybe three things within my profession to make enough money or to live how I want to live, which shouldn't be the case. But, you know, we're in a state where you might find two black teachers in several schools within a 2 mile, you know, radius. And so with that said, is I don't know, I can just speak about the Minnesota GOP. I ran for chair of the GOP in 2013. And I came in third. That was cool. But since that point and backing away from all that, I don't know really, even as far as outreach, what the Minnesota I know that there are good Republican senators. I know that Senator Roger Chamberlain, Republican, saw a black kid in North Minneapolis selling hot dogs and getting harassed by the Minneapolis police, and he had to shut his stand down. The health department, everybody got involved. Then I saw a Republican senator, not the black senators, I saw a white Republican senator go to the Minnesota State Legislature and pass a bill where this kid could do this every summer, you know, and not get nailed by the police. They had to leave him alone. I mean, he got the black legislators to sign on with him, but he initiated that, you know. And again, we talk about leadership. What are we initiating? Okay, I'm not trying to demonize those black, but some people, again, they can't see. That's what Mr. Edwards used to always say. Mr. Edwards used to always say that people, he said, Don, this is when we were off the air, so he used shaded language. He said, Don, blah, blah, blah. These people can't look at anything and see from the top to the bottom. They tunnel in exactly where they want to see, and they don't raise their eyes up, and they don't look down. That's why they're stumbling and fumbling. You know, and it's true. You know, how do you get to the core of people that you need to make sure that things are a little bit different? I mean, we could do these podcasts in the next 10 years, and in the next 10 years, we'd be talking about the same stuff, okay, until that point where the system has to crash. We're on that trajectory right now. We don't know when. It could be 2 years, 5 years. At some point, for things to reset, they have to crash, and they take a lot of casualties with them. You know, it might be education, it might be employment, finance, housing. Somewhere, somehow, within our community and within society, along the current track, something has to crash. It's just, it's a fact of history. History repeats itself with different people. You know, and so what do we do? Hey, guys, I've been rattling on. I think we had a great show. It's 10:30. Any final comments? You don't got to rush off to the schedule. I got at least 90 minutes in case we go over, so we can save.
You got 30
the,
minutes remaining.
Yeah.
I got one comment I wanted to make.
Okay.
And I'm going to show you how the news media plays you.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, we're going to talk about Chicago again.
Yeah,
if I told you, if they just reported that Chicago has had 250 people killed,
Woo.
How would you take that? People will say, well, this year, last year, they had 400 people killed. Well, you say they're doing better. But see, what they don't tell you, Ron and Mr. M, is that Chicago has 1,600 people shot in the last 102 days, plus 250 murdered. That's 1,850 people shot by other blacks since Memorial Day. No white police shootings.
I'm writing that down.
1,850 people shot, of which 250 was killed. See, they only tell you the killed in these cities. They don't tell you the ones that's been shot. Because if they told you the ones that was shot and put that number in there, it would be tremendous. The source of this is the Chicago Sun-Times. They report on it every day. And if you go back to Memorial Day, the 23rd and 25th, that weekend in May of this year, and you read every headline the day after, they tell you how many were shot, how many was killed. Add it up. Add it up.
1,600 people shot, and how many killed?
1,600 people were shot through this past Wednesday. I haven't told Thursday. And this and Friday is Labor Day weekend. I bet this Labor Day weekend you probably have about 70 people shot.
Woo. That's
look at these numbers. I mean, if you're saying that these are black people shooting other black people, I mean, who's doing the shooting? Where are the conflicts? That's where they kind of leaves me wondering. Okay, all these people. Okay, there's 1,600 people shot. By whom?
They shot by, I don't know. And it can't be all by drugs because they're killing 10-month-olds, 13-year-olds, 18-month-olds.
Yeah.
It wouldn't. The question, if it was white, here's another thing they do, too. If a white police officer shoot a black person, the headlines, white cops shoot black male.
Mm-hmm.
And I want y'all to pay attention to this. If it was the other way around, they wouldn't mention the color of the skin.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's
think about it.
Yeah.
They don't mention the color of the skin. Breonna Taylor supposedly had got shot in the bed. She didn't. But in Kansas City, you had a 4-year-old black child male that was shot while he was sleeping in the bed by another black male. It was a Taliaferro legend. This most recent activity of federal agencies going into cities assisting them is called Operation Legend. Trump named it after that young man. You don't hear nothing about that. They only talk about Breonna Taylor, who was heavily involved in drug dealing with other people, close associates with. Nobody talks about that. How in the heck all these criminals? And, you know, I hate to see anybody get killed, but come on, she's not no Rosa Parks.
Yeah, they're doing – see, and again, you hit on something, and we're just going to keep going here for a minute or two, but you hit on something very important. While we want to remain sensitive to the loss of life in the black community when these things happen, some of us never want to look and read the information that was surrounding it. You know, I had a guy get really upset with me because I I wrote something about George Floyd, or I said something on this show about George Floyd. And he goes, why are you making him a saint, a martyr? This guy did this and did that and did this. And I said, yeah, you're right. I did see that. And I'm not necessarily making him a saint or a martyr. I'm just pointing out that maybe he shouldn't be dead today. You know, and I understand that. And I understand that all these people, they were involved, so they were involved in something, but we don't need to be killed like...
Well, the thing is with George Floyd, George Floyd had a lot of he was chemically imposed with drugs and so on and so on. Plus, the technique that the police used was approved by the Minneapolis Police Department. And not only them, but many other of the 18,000 police departments in the country. Some has made reforms, but they haven't got rid of. And that's another thing. When you talk about police reform and getting rid of the police, people act as if there's only one police department across the whole nation that all police officers follow. That is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these municipalities don't think that the police is hard enough. And they have a right to set the policies under which their employees operate under, especially when they come in contact with the public. Oftentimes talks about St. Anne Police Department in St. Louis County. If you go through that city and you're speeding, they would chase you from here to Russia. They don't stop. They're going to get you. Other municipalities, they don't allow their police to engage in high-speed chases. So that's dependent on what those two municipalities want to do. White House has no control over that.
Yep, you're right. You're right. In closing, or starting to wrap up, I should say, what are the next steps for our leadership? I mean, if we could talk to the president of the Urban League, or the NAACP, or any organization, nonprofit in town here, some of them, you know, barely making it to keep the lights on, what would we say to them? Because you always have to have a plan, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, at this point, there's so many things going, there's so many moving parts. It's just so many. You know, I've been reading this book trying to get a little bit of education of how we got to where we're at. Because in growing up in the 50s, this country, the cities, I mean, I would go back and forth to Chicago and Detroit, where my grandparents lived in the summers as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see a constant deterioration of all the cities as we've moved on, especially as it relates to black people.
Mm-hmm.
And in reading this book, it's called The Warmth of Other Suns, about the great migration of blacks coming north. And it looks like in mass, people came out of the South, certain areas of the Deep South, to get away from things with colored drinking fountains. Oh, you got only colored can do this. Or what? Mm-hmm. They came here to get away from all of that. And although it was still here covertly, I think people came with a mindset that they could buy land, they could get their own housing, in spite of things like redlining and these
mm-hmm.
freeways that come through that have torn up all of our communities. For some reason, they always come through black communities that have gotten started. And you look back through the 50s and this whole freeway system. So, you know, I think the mentality, somehow we've lost the idea of, if I didn't get up and go to school every day, if there was 10 minutes late, I'd wake up and I'd just be seeing stars. My head would be, you know, get out of here and go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Like the parents and the families just seem to have more of a purpose and a more of a, a mentality that like God, you're saying,
mm-hmm.
you have a master's degree, but still you want to make more, you're going to have to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick up other things. And I know all of the people I came up with that would say things like, well, you have to take two jobs and make money good. And they were willing to dig in to do something for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, we got to put our heads together and we have to be part of the narrative because we're doing it for our people.
Yeah, and I agree. Caller, any final words?
Well, yeah, he's right. Blacks are not a separate nation in the United States. That is not going to exist. But you must also remember, too, now, that yes, things did go on that was terrible. And if you went to Nigeria, you're going to experience the same thing. You black look like them. They can tell the difference, but you're going to experience the same thing. You're talking about competition, and people don't like competition if they have a large portion of the market or share. So you, the person that says that they are oppressed, going to have to train your own children and stop depending on others to train them. They're not going to do it. They're not going to give your children what's needed to take power from theirs.
Right, well, we appreciate you calling in today. We get a wrap up. You can give me the show that 30 minute buffer after 10:30, but we're usually done by 10:30. I appreciate everyone that listened and stayed with us on Facebook Live and on Blog Talk Radio. And as soon as this show is posted, the link from the Blog Talk Radio show page, you can always share that and listen to the podcast. I'd like to thank Mr. M and our callers. We'll be back next week, 9:30 p.m. or a.m. Central Standard Time. Here's James Brown. So you can barely hear him. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere, Em. I'm shutting it down.